Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Winnipeg Free Press, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Globe and Mail. Jeff Blair has written for all four. And if you can survive the world of newspapers, you can survive anything. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You mentioned the film session. Was there something that stood out to you as a common denominator with the two games in Toronto?
Just taking a one-on-one challenge. I think DeRozan and Lowry really took it upon themselves to get their team, you know, back on track. And we have to take that one-on-one challenge and be better with those two guys.
Good morning and welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. Stephen Brunn alongside me. That was Tyrone Lue, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday. As the Cavaliers attempt a rebound from back-to-back losses, the last of which was a 105-99 Game 4 loss to the Toronto Raptors at the Air Canada Centre. Game 5 goes tonight. And we're going to be joined in a few minutes by John Schumann of NBA.com. He's written kind of an interesting piece on that website. I want to talk to John because I'm reading his piece and I'm trying to figure out how the hell the Raptors won that game. Because he really talks about how the Cavaliers, when you get right down to it, offensively, the Cavaliers did an awful lot of good things up until the fourth quarter when they had like one basket in the final nine possessions.
In the second half, mostly.
Like, in the second half, yeah.
With the second unit, too.
With the second unit. But he's got an interesting take on, surprise, surprise newsflash that the Cavaliers' biggest issue is at their own end of the court as opposed to the other end of the court. We'll talk to John about that. As I said, game five tonight, it's now a best of three series. The West. Well, I could say is I wonder what Adam Silver thought about this morning as he contemplated that much-anticipated Oklahoma City-Toronto Raptors final.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, but, and it's not like it's OKC's not a glamorous team.
No.
They got a couple superstars there. But, yeah, it feels like the Warriors are just out of magic and out of gas.
Yeah.
Right? An unbelievable run. Last season, last year's playoffs, this season, this year's playoffs up till now. But, it just kind of feels like something's not in the air anymore for those guys.
Well, and Adrian Wojnarowski just reported a couple of minutes ago, actually, on Twitter, that a source close to Steph Curry has said that Curry's playing only about 70%, which if you watched last night's game, and I don't want to spend a great deal of time talking about Oklahoma City and Golden State. But if you watch last night's game, the thing that stood out to me was how many bad decisions Steph Curry made with the ball. And I really believe, Stephen, whether it's hockey or basketball, one of the signs of a guy who's hurt is when they make bad decisions.
Can be, yeah.
Because you're trying to compensate for something. And whether you overreach, there were a couple of instances last night, especially in the second quarter when the game was getting away from him. He just made some bad, bad decisions. Bad decisions trying to pass. Twice he passed up a shot under the basket. He passed up a shot for a pass. And in both cases, or at least in one of the cases, it was a turnover and led to a three-point shot. But you are right. Look, Oklahoma City, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, I think maybe we got so wrapped up with Golden State this year that perhaps we forgot that there's a team that is also staring at a window of opportunity, possibly closing because Kevin Durant's a free agent. This could be this duo's last kick at the cat.
Well, and haven't always been the sum of their parts, right? They've been a puzzling team to watch because the two of them, you know, that 1-2 punch is as good as anybody, obviously, in basketball. But you know, haven't always played well together, haven't always played well as a team, you know, seemed a little dysfunctional at times. And, you know, which is why when the conversation, you know, the kind of going into the playoff conversation out of the West, most of it was, you know, will mm-hmm. the Warriors be able to beat the Spurs, right? Because the Spurs are the Spurs and they have the great system and the great coach and the great consistency and the Warriors are, you know, all world. So that everybody kind of thought that was what it was going to come down to. But OKC's kind of crashed the party and, you know, right now, you know, you're playing as well as Well, you know, it's like playing as well as who? Like playing as well as the Toronto Raptors did the last two games? Or are you like, it's, you know, where the script has been altered.
Yeah. And, well, as Ty Lue said during his news conference yesterday, Stephen used those exact same words. They flipped the script on us.
Yep.
In Toronto. We had it our way at home. They flipped the script on us. And he also, I thought, really, I don't think he was calling out, I don't think he was calling out LeBron James when he made the comment about how you sort of got to boil it down now to one-on-one matchups. The old coaches thing, right? Boil it down to one-on-one matchups. Try to beat the guy in front of you. I got the sense he was kind of, in holding out DeRozan and Lowry as an example, I got the impression he was pointing the finger directly at Kyrie Irving more than anybody else. Because I don't think you're going to, I mean, LeBron did, could LeBron have done anything else in that game? He did absolutely everything he could.
Yeah, you're asking him. He's, you know, he's doing, he's performing a multitude of roles for that team right now.
Whereas Kyrie Irving was just, anyhow. As I said, John Schumann from NBA.com will join us. Buck Martinez will join us at 9:35.
Yeah. Want to talk about that?
6-0 loss to the New York Yankees. Two hits. Josh Donaldson bunting in the third inning with two on.
But, you know, well, it's one of those games, right, where knowing that the big three are at the back of the Yankees' bullpen.
You've got to win in six.
Yeah, it kind of felt like the game was over at 2-0, the way the offense is performing or not performing right now. So, the last innings were almost kind of a beside the point.
Troy Tulowitzki left the game with what he says was a minor leg or quad injury after stealing second. Would have been nice if he'd alerted the Jays to that because John Gibbons ended up using Justin Smoke as a pinch hitter for Darwin Barney. Tulo comes out of the game after the end of the inning. Now you've got Russ Martin at second.
Yeah, there was. He was.
And Ryan Goins at short.
Very, you know, again, at least at a time when the game seemed lost anyway because they weren't going to score four runs against that bullpen. And the Yankees didn't have to use two of the big three last night. It was kind of, you know, they once Betances came in, then the game was over. But did not feel good. And I know there's always a tendency to talk about R.A. Dickey when we talk about the Blue Jays' failings and, you know, R.A. Dickey.
R.A. Dickey did everything he could last night.
Well,
He was
R.A. Dickey in May. Gives you a good start.
Yeah.
You know, you probably – we talked a little bit of this before the show, Jeff, but, you know, you probably don't let him pitch into the seventh inning. You probably make a move there if you think you got a better chance to win, frankly.
You make a move if Brett Cecil and Drew Storen's doing what you thought he was doing.
Yeah.
You make a move then.
And even then, if you're trailing the Yankees late and your offense is sputtering, you know, not even beyond sputtering, you got almost no chance of winning that game.
No.
So you might as well send R.A. Dickey out for another inning because, you know, he's durable and he's going to save your bullpen such as it is for the next game. But I got no complaints with him. You know, he could have come out of that game six complete, two earned runs, right?
Yeah. No, I look, R.A. Dickey, R.A. Dickey is what he is, and he gives you what you're going to get. I mean,
he's not what's wrong with the Blue Jays.
No, he's definitely
no,
not.
And no
he's
one
not,
in the,
he's not in the he's not in the top five list of what's wrong.
No,
with
no
the
one
Blue
in
Jays.
That starting rotation is what's wrong with the Blue Jays. You know, there's certain things we can just kind of take out of the starting rotation and the closer.
Yeah.
Not an issue.
No, and Greg Zahn made a great point. During the game, and it's something I've talked about a lot, and if you're playing in the American League East, the old sort of, well, you know what, I'm going to try to get a ground ball, that doesn't work in the American League East. You need guys who can come in from the bullpen and strike people out because you do not want the ball in play. And what the Jays are really, really missing right now, other than Osuna, frankly, is a guy who can come in and strike people.
Yep.
They've got a lot of guys. Joe Biagini gives up a couple of ground balls. Can't do that when there's a couple of men on base.
But still not. The way this team is constructed, that's not – it's an issue. It's not the fatal flaw. The fatal flaw is
hitting
four guys who should be killing it.
Yep.
And that you and I and everybody else who watches baseball would have bet their lives – on one thing about this team, they'll score a bunch of runs. I think we all said the same thing. Well, you know, the one thing is, you know, they're going to score a ton of runs. So whatever else, you know, they're going to have to get enough pitching to be able to survive while scoring a ton of runs. Well, if they don't score a ton of runs, then all flaws are going to be exposed, and you know, and they're going to come to the surface. And things like that, you know, the kind of transition part of the bullpen looks like a big issue. But if they were scoring runs at even close to the clip they were scoring them last year, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So,
right.
And I'll tell you, Jeff, you know, we're going to talk about this a little more later, but you know, I thought there were kind of two possible scenarios for this team coming to this year. One was they would essentially pick up where they left off, and they would be in contention all year long, and you'd be talking about kind of whether they could win the division or whether there'd be a wild card or whatever. Second one was they'll be kind of a, you know, kind of a team on the edge of contention, in which case it's going to be a very, very tough call for Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, mm-hmm. ownership. What do you do? The one scenario I thought was impossible was that they would fall out of it by June.
Yeah, and not score runs.
And and that's the reason they're falling out
of
it. But I'm starting to think that they're going to fall out of it by June.
Well, it's, you know, Edwin played first base last night, and I think it's like his 11th start this year, so it's certainly not rare to see him at first base. But I will tell you that chatter is out there that, for example, the New York Mets, they're looking for a first baseman. J.P. Ricciardi's their assistant general manager. He's the guy that brought Edwin over to Toronto. There's chatter out there that the Jays, they're not showcasing guys. Everybody knows what Edwin can do. Everybody knows what Edwin's about. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if you see Edwin play a few more games at first base just to kind of suggest to National League teams that, you know, hey, if you get this guy, you are getting a guy who can contribute on an everyday basis. And that doesn't mean Edwin's going to be traded, but it certainly means that the organization is, you know, they're open to suggestions right now.
If they're 10 games out 2 weeks from now, Edwin's going to be traded.
Yes.
Yeah, not in 2 weeks, but that's when the conversation's going to heat up.
In the meantime, you show him at first base, and we go from there. But, yeah, you're right. This isn't the scenario I think anybody expected. Could the Jays, if someone said to me the Jays would be seven games back at the end of May, I'd gone, okay, well, then the pitching's gone for crap. They're losing a lot of games 10-8. I mean, they just can't score runs.
Yeah, and that guys, you know, again, guys who are as consistent, three of the probably six most consistent offensive players in baseball over the last 5 years. You can add Tulo into that, actually. Aside from his Toronto stint, have just kind of lost it.
Yeah, and
all at the same time.
And I still, the whole Josh Donaldson bunting for a single.
I think that's just a symptom, not the disease.
No, it's not the disease, but it's dumb baseball. I agree with San in that completely. It's dumb baseball. Ed Olczyk, Kyle Dubas, assistant general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs and general manager of the Marlies, will join us. A lot to talk to Kyle about. A lot happening with the Marlies and with the Leafs prospects. And this is a fun story. At 10:40, John Waro does a terrific job as the Associated Press at Buffalo Sports Reporter. We're going to talk about the Bills' new media rules for covering workouts.
Rex doesn't love the media quite so much anymore. What happened? I thought he loved the media.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. And basically, you can't... Well, they're telling the media. They're not asking. They've told the media that you can't report on Twitter who drops what pass during these optional team activities.
Optional team activities.
So, of course, and God love them, I've got an immense amount of respect for the Buffalo guys that cover the team. There are some great... Tyler Dunn had one tweet where instead of saying that it was EJ... I can't remember. Instead of saying who the quarterback was who overthrew a receiver, he basically said, if you take this player's number, subtract this player's number, the number that you get, that's the number of the quarterback that just overthrew the guy. It was... guys were coming up with different ways of describing. You know, they would tweet out, I can't tell you this, but so-and-so dropped. Anyhow, I mean, it's typical NFL. NFL's a league run by... I mean, it's Satan's league. It really is.
Although, you know, in terms of the media, they're great. They've been great with access traditionally.
But they've got some of those dumbass... I mean, the Bills have that stupid rule where they open practice for like 2 minutes.
You should see. Hey, you should look at the CFL media rules right now. Yeah, but I mean, they won't let anybody in the dressing room anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, but the NFL...
They need publicity. Fine. You know, but no,
the NFL one where they walk you around the field, you know, within 4 minutes so that you're not taking any, you know, you're not taking any... notes, you really can't see what's going on. I mean,
so you can get to the dressing room fast. They're big stadiums. No, look.
No, I'm talking about the practice facility. The Bills take you in and they walk you around for about 4 minutes while guys are stretching. And
I got no problem with their media stuff. I got to, and I, you know, that's, they've generally been very, very good, almost to the point of excess. But this, what you get is this kind of weird coaching paranoia.
Yes.
Where guys think that you're actually going to be able to tell people something, somebody, some great secret. When, of course, most people who cover sports don't have a clue what they're watching.
Yeah, that's
in terms of the X's and O's. Yeah. They can't tell anybody anything.
But there is you have to admit there is a special place in hell for NFL coaches.
Well, they're an interesting breed, yeah. There is. It's a coach's league.
There is. John Schumann. We promised you John Schumann. We shall deliver. Staff writer for NBA.com joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, John.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Going well. I'm reading your piece, and I'm trying to figure out how the hell the Raptors won. Not really. I mean,
it was a fascinating game, and just that whole sequence of events in the fourth quarter where Cleveland just kept running the same play and the Raptors couldn't stop it was amazing. And then they stopped it once and Cleveland stopped going to it, and they scored once in their last nine times with the ball, and the Raptors escaped and we have a series.
How much of this series do you think comes down to coaching? I mean, you've got obviously a transcendent player in LeBron James. You've got some good players in the Raptors. You've got a coach in Dwayne Casey who, a lot of people in this city, frankly, spend a great deal of time picking apart. And that's going to be the case until he actually wins something in this city. And in Tyronn Lue, of course, you've got the guy who replaced David Blatt. Are you getting any read in these two coaches so far through four games? In particular, the Cavaliers coach.
I mean, I think it's more about the players than the coaches. Honestly, I think, I don't think Tyronn Lue can turn Kevin Love into a great defender, can turn, Tristan Thompson into a rim protector. Those guys are getting picked on defensively. The Raptors basically driving to the basket with no fear. Hassan Whiteside was a long time ago, basically, in regard to what the Raptors are doing offensively. I think coaching can definitely get the best out of players. I think there's some ways both teams can play better going forward. I think honestly, it's up to the players, and LeBron James is sort of aggressiveness going forward, Kevin Love's ability to make some shots, and Cleveland's ability to just be better defensively, and the Raptors' ability to defend as well as they did in games 3 and 4.
What was so, John, if you were looking aside from the locale, what is the fundamental difference between those first two games when Cleveland blew the doors off the Raptors and the second two games when the Raptors were beyond competitive when they won, and then even in the second game they had a big lead and kind of played back a little bit, but pulled off the game. When you talk about kind of the matchup issues, the issues that you have with guys like Kevin Love in terms of defense, the issues that the deficit the Cavaliers have under the basket, but what changed so dramatically between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4?
Well, I think the bigger change was on the Raptors' end of the floor. I think they were definitely – they executed better. Just setting better screens allows them to execute their game plan better offensively and pick on the defenders they want to pick on. If they're trying to get Kevin Love, defending one of their guards, that screen that Patrick Patterson sets is so important to getting that done. And so they executed better offensively. That allowed them to attack the basket a little better, pick on the defenders they wanted to, whether it be Love or Tristan Thompson or J.R. Smith on that switch against Lowry late in game 4. But I also think Toronto executed their game plan better defensively, too. Their rotations were a little bit better. They were just a little bit more organized, especially on the weak side when they're, sort of leaning towards LeBron, but trying to also stay at home on the shooters. So they did a better job on both ends of the floor of just executing and playing better. I think as the series has gone on, they've known their game plan. They've just done it better. They've seen these plays before, and they've adjusted and they've dealt with them in a sharper fashion.
John, I got the sense listening to Tyronn Lue in his media session yesterday, especially when he talked about essentially trying to boil down the series to, or not boil down the series, but to boil down the game to kind of a matchup of individuals as well as teams. He talked about how DeRozan and Kyle Lowry had kind of elevated this game. I almost got the sense that in some ways he was pointing the finger a little bit at Kyrie Irving. As we said, I'm not entirely certain LeBron can do anything more than LeBron didn't. Kevin Love, I don't know, maybe could be hurt. Kyrie Irving's had kind of, he's had kind of an interesting series, hasn't he? Because he's gone, certainly the games in Toronto, I thought there were times where he just went missing. And it's hard for Kyrie Irving, even with LeBron James, it's hard for Kyrie Irving to go missing.
Yeah, there was a stretch in game four where he got hot and they just sort of gave him the ball. Even with LeBron on the floor, they mm-hmm. sort of gave him the ball possession after possession and tried to let him go one-on-one. But that kind of offense is, it's not getting other people involved. And when he cools off, then everybody else is now and hasn't touched the ball in a while. He had a big game too.
Yes.
But it was the same kind of thing. It was a lot of one-on-one stuff and stuff that maybe the Raptors are okay with seeing him do. If he's going to play one-on-one, not get other guys involved and shoot pull-up mid-range jumpers, I think they're okay with that. They just want to contest those as best they can, which I think they didn't do as well in game one and two as they did in game three and four.
John, what do you anticipate tonight? This is a series that has surprised people, and many people willing to bet their lives after the first two games that Cleveland, would be hard pressed to lose a game in this series. Now it looks very, very competitive. What do you prognosticate? Go ahead.
I after these playoffs, after seeing what Oklahoma City did last night, the Raptors have done the last couple of games, I have a hard time predicting what's going to happen. I think it should be definitely closer than it was in the first two games. I think the Raptors found some things that work for them that they can avoid the kind of blowouts they had in games one and two. I think Cleveland will be better. But I think it depends a lot on Kevin Love, I think, is such a big factor in this series because he's so talented and will get some good shots playing off of LeBron James. But if he's not making them, if he's sort of lost some confidence or anything, this is still the biggest stage he's ever played on. So, it could come down to him and his ability to make some shots, make some plays, and take advantage of the attention, obviously, that the Raptors are going to pay to LeBron James.
Now, you mentioned Oklahoma City. They are up 3-1 against Golden State. Golden State looked to me like they were in fumes. And when Oklahoma City went in that run in the second quarter, it was almost like roadkill. Watching Steph Curry last night, you really get the sense that this is a guy who's not near to 100%, don't you? Because he made a couple of very un-Steph Curry-like decisions, I thought, in that second quarter at the offensive end of the court.
Yeah, Steve Kerr said he's not hurt, but it's hard to believe that just because you've never seen him play so poorly, or with little confidence offensively. He's taking shots, driving to the basket with just not the same explosion. One of the things that he's improved upon so much over the last few years is his ability to finish at the rim, and he wasn't able to do that at all. Jumpers come and go, but his ability to finish in traffic was bad last night. It's hard to believe that there's not something wrong or he's not fully recovered from the knee injury that he suffered earlier in the playoffs. But still, it's pretty stunning to see Golden State play so poorly. And give credit to Oklahoma City. They're playing their best basketball of the year at absolutely the right time.
John, we appreciate you doing this as always. Should be fun tonight. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
John Schumann, staff writer at NBA.com. You can follow him on Twitter at John Schumann. That's Schumann. And we will have the Raptors and Cavaliers game 5 tonight on Sportsnet Ontario. Tim and Sid will be live from Jurassic Park from 5 to 6:30 p.m. They will host Raptor Central pregame along with Alvin Williams at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Tip-off will be just after 8:30. Matt Devlin, Leo Routens, Eric Smith, Michael Grange, Arash Madani, Tim and Sid, and Alvin Williams.
It's fun hearing working the game. Listen to a guy who knows as much about the game and as much about the league as John Schumann does.
And just say, you go, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Exactly.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
It's been intriguing reading in the past 3 days. Actually, reading since the Raptors won Game 3, reading some of the national guys in the States, not for the old sort of Canadian inferiority, let's find what the Americans are thinking about us, but just hearing guys who make a living dissecting the game. Because one thing NBA.com does really well, their guys know the game. They dissect the game. And reading how they're essentially writing themselves into the position of saying, I don't know either. It's like you read the story and you go, there's a whole bunch of yeah buts, you know, in the story. This is working. But the Raptors came back and did this. It is fun. And, you know, I make no apologies for the fact that I've had a lot of fun watching this series. I hope like hell the Raptors win.
There's nothing wrong with having fun watching sports.
No, I'm quite enjoying it as well.
If you're in this business, you better have fun. You know, you better enjoy it. Otherwise, go do something else. Go sell insurance.
I was telling someone on the other day, you know, they were talking about, you seem a little, you know, over the top, the Raptors. I said, I'm cheering for the story. You know what? If the Raptors were multiple NBA champions and were losing to Cleveland, I'd kind of be quietly cheering for Cleveland to win because it would be great talk radio. You could fire. The best story in Toronto right now is Raptors go to the NBA Finals. Best story in Toronto, period. So I'm cheering for the story, man.
Well, and even beside that, Jeff, look, if you lose the ability to feel what people feel when they watch sports, you know, it's a the empty diversion that it is. Mm-hmm. But if you're always kind of saying, well, you know, I see the guy behind the curtain here. So, you know, I see these, don't you see the wires? What's wrong with you? Yeah. Those people can't fly. Don't you see the wires? Well, what's the point? You know, what's the point in tearing it down all the time and saying, well, you know, no, actually it's this. Sometimes you got to just roll with it and feel it because, you know, the power in this stuff is that, you know, it's that it makes people feel happy or sad or angry or, you know, over the moon. This is a fun moment in the city. Just like the Jays last fall was a fun moment in the city. And if you were, you know, you were kind of an overly analytical grump about that, then, you know, again, I think you kind of detach yourself, whether, and that includes whether you're writing the story or reporting it in other ways. I've been in this business now for a long, long time. And one of the things that occurred to me very early on was, you know, I don't want to leech that out of me completely because I know guys who have.
Yeah.
If they don't get any pleasure out of watching sports or can't feel the fan thing every once in a while, then you really should go do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you it's like preserving the little kid in you a little bit, you know, preserving the sense of wonder.
Well, and I think what you try to do, Stephen, and, you know, when I speak to journalism classes and I talk about this, what you don't want to have happen is you don't want to have the fan in you prevent you from reporting a difficult story.
Sure, yeah.
And
when it's,
you know what?
When it's most, something real, though,
yeah.
Jeff.
Well, yeah, when it's something real. You don't want the fan in you to prevent yourself from reporting, for example, that so-and-so might be hurt or something like that.
No, no.
You know, but other than that, I mean, hell yeah, have fun with it, man. Otherwise, you're just going to be, you know, you're going to be a grumpy old newspaper reporter.
Well, yeah, and... You know, most of this stuff, you know, again, I hate to say it, most of this stuff doesn't matter. So the fun is actually it's actually what matters. It's not like this is going to kind of alter the world or alter people's lives. It's a great kind of collective fantasy we all jump into every once in a while. And, you know, yeah, if there's something actually that means something on Earth, you would hope that you would kind of be, you know, that the journalistic instincts kick in. But most of this is about, you know, again, is about the fan fantasy. It's about that sense that our team is winning or our team is losing. You know, we don't use we. You don't talk about them that way. And sometimes you're very detached from the home team.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, there's millions of people who are caught up in this.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be the guy standing on the side saying, you're all, hey, come on, get real. This isn't, you know, all I'm saying is it's pointless.
Yeah.
And it's not any great, doesn't show any great, you know, extra scruples or anything. It's just... kind of denying what you're, you know, the business you're in and what you're reporting on.
Buck Martinez Well, now we're going to start talking about the difficult
stuff. Well, this is the other side of the
coin. This is the other side of the coin. Toronto Blue Jays, 6-0 losers to the New York Yankees last night, first of three games. Do not blame this one on R.A. Dickey, even though I know most of you are. Buck Martinez, the Blue Jays play-by-play voice, will join us. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, we just can't get anything going, obviously. Ran into a good pitcher tonight. Tried to do some things. You know, you saw JD drop down a bunt, trying to get us going. Offensively couldn't get anything going.
It's Troy Tulowitzki, the Blue Jays, after another lost evening at the park for the Blue Jays last night. Tulowitzki, two walks, stolen base, a single. Hurt a quad, it appeared. Minor injury, stealing second, and took himself out of the game after that inning was over. Unfortunately, by that point, John Gibbons had pinch hit. Justin Smoke for Darwin Barney. As a result, Russ Martin finished the game at second base, which really
was not ideal. Yeah.
Really not ideal. Especially John Gibbons told Russ Martin at the start of the year, sat him down and said, here's what we're going to do. On days that Dickey pitches, I don't want to see you. You can take, you know, you want to take batting practice. Don't even take batting practice. Go in the cage, show up. I'm only using you if you're going to pinch hit. So if you want to show up and halfway through the game, go out and, you know, start swinging in the cage, that's fine. I guarantee you he never said, I'm going to use you at second base in games that R.A. Dickey's starting. Anyhow, there you go. The Jays 6-0 losers to the Yankees. Second game of the series goes tonight. Second of three tonight. Marco Estrada on the mound for the Jays. Ivan Nova for the Yankees. And first pitch will be at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 1. Of course, you can also see it in the Sportsnet Now app. And Blue Jay Central with Cam Lanzon will be at 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez, Barry Davis at the call of the game on the TV side. Jerry Joe on the radio side. Mike Wilner will be handling the between innings duties and also handling the Blue Jays talk at the end of the game. And the Blue Jays, 22-25, three games under 500. Stephen, we talked about this a little bit in the first part of the show. Kevin Barker just showed up. First thing we started talking about was Donaldson's bunt in the third inning, attempting to bunt for a base hit with two men on. I'm very clear. The bunt to me is the most useless play in baseball in the third inning. It makes no sense, especially when I've got an MVP who's hit a couple of home runs off the guy in the mound. But as Barker said, he took that as a sign of guys really knowing what's going on with this team. And essentially, Josh Donaldson was trying to get something going, move runners into scoring position.
Yeah, plus he's scuffling.
Exactly.
He could roll over a pitch into a double play, and then, and that's kind of what's been happening. So I think it was desperate. You're right, it's bad baseball, but it's desperation. It's probably trying to send a little bit of a message about unselfishness, moving runners over, trying to score a run without another hit. It's a team that is searching. The other thing is, Jeff, and I'm starting to feel this, you know, very much watching these guys. You know, we talked about it. They came out of spring training with a swag, right? Mm-hmm. We are the Blue Jays.
Yep.
We kicked everybody's butt last year offensively. And, you know, when the pitching settled down, we ran. We ran away. I think that swagger is pretty much gone now.
Oh, yeah, there ain't no swagger there.
No, and I think that sense of don't worry, we're all going to start hitting at a certain point and scoring seven runs a game, I think that's kind of gone now too. There's some lost souls there in that batting lineup, and, you know, it's not one guy. And I have no explanation, and they have no explanation, I'm sure. I'm sure John Gibbons has no explanation, or Ross Atkins, or Mark Shapiro. But that sense that don't worry, the switch is going to get flipped here any second now, I don't know. Watching that game last night, did you feel like that? Anybody on that?
No.
In that dugout believes that right now?
Oh, God, no.
Nope. And that's a tough one, right? Because how do you fix that?
I'm at the point now, God's honest truth, I'm at the point now where I'm surprised when Batista Donaldson, Edwin Tulo all get hits.
Yep.
That shocks me. I'm surprised. I don't expect it. The back-to-back home runs, never saw that coming. But no, there's no trying to find the silver lining. I just, I don't get the sense. You know, you try to comfort yourself, and we are joined by Buck Martinez. Now, I want to bring Buck in this discussion. Buck, thanks for joining us this morning. Stephen and I were just talking
about.
Good morning,
boys.
Good morning. We were just talking about. Well, we were talking about the same thing you and Dan spent 90% of the game talking about last night. The lack of offense. But you know, I'm saying that you can take comfort in saying, well, this guy is changing his approach. He's working on this. He's working on that, and has, you know, he's got better swings, and he's making a little better contact, and all that. But man, to me, there's been a whole lot of one step forward, two step back, or one step forward, one step sideways with this team. And as I just told Stephen, Buck, I'm at the point now where I'm kind of surprised, you know, when they have a great offensive game. It reminds me that I shouldn't be because they were so good last year, but I certainly don't go into every game expecting they're going to get double digit hits anymore.
No, and you know, you're right in thinking that because it is what it is. And you know, Bill Parcells always says, you are what your record says you are. And that's what this team's doing right now. When you look at the difference between last year and this year, it's hard to fathom these are basically the same players they had last year. You know, I know Ben Revere's not at the top of the order, and some people think that has an impact on him. But when Boston scores 264 runs and the Blue Jays have scored 78 less, that's a concern. And Boston's got seven guys in their lineup now hitting 300.
Well,
oh, by the way, David Price went to 7-1 last night.
Yes.
So, you know, nobody's going to come back to the Blue Jays. They have to figure a way how to get things turned around and get out of this hole. They're still three games under 500. You know, yeah, everything is good. You say, okay, well, look at the players. They've done it before. They'll do it again. Well, you know, we're at the 47-game mark now, and basically 13 games away from that magic 60-game number that a lot of general managers look at as an assessment of who you are. And, you know, it's time you see some results. And, you know, you can't talk about, well, he's trying. And, you know, nobody said it better than Josh Donaldson. This is not the tri-league.
Well, you know, I think I know the kind of magical thinking around Ben Revere, but the guy who's playing left field is actually one of the happy stories this year, right? The guy who's playing the position Ben Revere's playing is having a pretty good year.
Absolutely, but the only difference was Revere was kind of a threat to steal. I know he didn't run a lot at the top of the order, but he was a threat to steal. And, you know, you can watch the way they're pitching Donaldson and Bautista and Eddie. They're all, you know, getting a steady diet of pitches away and everything else. But, yeah, major league hitters should be able to adjust to that. But, you know, it's probably taken a little bit longer than we all expected it would.
Well, and that's, you know, which brings us to the kind of, you know, the benchmarks in the season, Buck. And I think the one thing we would all agree on is that if this is not a better-than-average offensive team, they're not going to contend, right? That's even with very good starting pitching, I think we've kind of seen the limits of where that good starting pitching and a reliable closer. Obviously, there's issues in the other parts of the bullpen, but you know, the way this team is constructed, they've got to be kind of in a top third, you know, top third of the majors offensively to hang with the Bostons and hang with the Baltimores, and there's not even a hint of it right now.
No, there's no question about that. You're right on the money, Stephen. The offense, it'll cover up a lot of flaws, and it did last year. And it certainly kept them in the race until the end of July where they were, you know, a game under 500, and all of a sudden they got red hot. You know, right now, the way they're playing, I don't think anybody sees two 11-game win streaks in their future. And all we can go by is what we see right now. And, you know, when you're getting two and three hits a night, you're not going to score any runs, and that's been the problem. And, you know, Donaldson last night, he's not been swinging the bat well.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with him trying to bunt. You've got Saunders coming up and Eddie coming up, and it's like, okay, we'll scratch out a couple of runs right here because that's the mindset you have to have against the Yankees. You're not going to pummel them because if you start to pummel them, you're going to face that three-headed monster down in the bullpen. So, you know, you've got to pick and choose your spots and hope you get a two-run single here and there right now the way these guys are swinging. And you can't play for the big inning when there's no signs of a big inning coming, and there haven't been. Like Jeffrey said, you haven't had the feeling that, oh, this team's going to put up 15 hits and score 8 runs tonight. That's not been the case.
See, I mean, I see what you're saying about the bunt, but and maybe I'm still guilty of thinking that this team is last year's team, but I look at Josh Donaldson, I go, you got a man at first, a man at second. I don't know. Maybe I take a shot.
Running for a base hit. There's no question.
Yeah, that's
that,
true. He was.
Watched him swing lately.
Yeah. You're right.
What,
you're right.
74 games without an RBI.
You're right.
Four advance.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
You have to go with what you have right now. And Josh is the one that thought of that. He said, you know, I got to do something to get this thing going. And I thought it was a good move at that time because it sent the message we're not normally like this.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to do things abnormally to get some runs across.
I'm interested in this. It didn't have really anything to do with the outcome of the game, I don't think. But the injury with that Tulowitzki suffered on the slide into second. I'm just wondering here, Buck. John Gibbons pinch hits Justin Smoak, and then now Tulo comes out of the game, and now he's got to go with Goins at short and Martin at second. Should Tulo, as a guy who's managed a team, would you want your guy at second base to give you the high sign or something? Like, you know, shouldn't it be in John Gibbons' mind that I might have to make this move and replace my infielder? You know what I'm saying? Maybe I leave Darwin Barney in.
Oh, I know what you're saying. You try to conserve at least one of those players in that situation, because after he pinch hit for Smoak or with Smoak, then he finds out Tulowitzki has to come out of the game. So you got to put Russell Martin in because Barney's out of the game.
Right.
Yeah, there were a lot of things there. But I don't think at that point when Tulo got up and started stretching out his right leg that he said, I'm going to have to come out of this game.
Okay.
Probably happened once he got back to the dugout and said, wow, this is a little bit worse than I thought. Let's take care of it right now. And as you know, Tulo got treatment when he came out of the game and continued mm-hmm. to do that after the game. So hopefully he'll be ready to go tonight. But, you know, when you got a player that's played 10 years in the big leagues and has had injuries in the past, when he says, hey, I need to come out of this game, you got to listen to him.
True.
But what do you think, you know, John Gibbons got, Mark Shapiro was on the show last week and essentially said, we're not going to fire the manager. And I know that can
right.
change. But said, you
I
know,
heard that.
Yep. Yeah, and I get the feeling that, you know, whatever happens here, they're going to ride out this season with John Gibbons. But what do you think's going through his head right now? Because there are not, from a managerial standpoint, there is nothing you can do about what's happening right now. You pencil in that lineup, you can shuffle it around, you can put Bautista in the leadoff spot, but essentially the guys you've got are the guys you've got. There's no cavalry riding in from the minor leagues that's going to help you. Maybe Devin Travis will help you a little bit, but really, not a lot coming. Your starting pitching's been pretty darn good. Your closer is lights out. You've got issues getting to the closer. But, you know, it all comes down to four guys or five guys in the lineup who have hit their entire lives and are not hitting now. And you've got to play them. So you just sit there and chew sunflower seeds and think about the offseason? Like, what do you do if you're John Gibbons right now?
Yeah, you know what, and once again, that reflects the complexity of being a manager in any major sport now, manager or head coach, because you're only as good as your players, and we see it all the time. But last year, John Gibbons was a genius second half of the season because they scored so many runs, and they went, you know, they had two 11-game win streaks in the course of that season, and this year it's a different story. But, you know, no matter what, it all gets down to the players on the field. They have to figure out a way to get it done. And, you know, John can put them in the best possible positions, and I think he's tried that with Michael Saunders hitting fourth and using Smoak and separating Smoak and Saunders with Tulowitzki, trying to mix it up as much as he can with the players he has, because you're right. You know, there's nobody down in AAA. There's no trades coming. There's no David Price move. There's no Tulowitzki trade coming at the trade deadline because they don't have the players in the minor leagues to pull off those kind of trades anymore. And I don't think the management, Atkins or Shapiro, are inclined to trade anymore their prospects because the cabin is pretty bare. But, you know, all you can do as a manager is just to say, okay, boys, you got to step it up. Let's go. There's nothing else we can do. This is what we're dealt. And you got to hope that the pride of the players comes out and says, we're going to fix this ourselves. And to their credit, that's what led to that meeting in Minnesota. And they said, well, whatever it takes, John, we're in. You want to mix the lineup up, we're in. Whatever you think, this is what we have on our minds, we're in. And you know what? That's all you can do as a manager.
Buck, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
All right, fellas. You have a great day.
You too. That's Buck Martinez, our Blue Jays play-by-play voice in Sportsnet. He and Dan Schulman will have the call of the game, game two of the three-game series in the Bronx tonight. Marco Estrada against Ivan Nova. First pitch at 7:00 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. The Pittsburgh Penguins tied up their best of 7 Eastern Conference final with the Tampa Bay Lightning last night. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC worked the game, and Eddie Olchuk will join Stephen Brunt and myself when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.